1 Corinthians, Paul says, "For we are God's fellow workers, you are God's field, you are God's building. According to the grace of God which was given to me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds on it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." In this podcast, we explore those who went the wrong way. We examine why it happened, how it happened, and who it happened to. But most importantly, we always ask the question, could it happen to us?
Thanks for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Before we begin, we want to be clear, the opinions that we present are ours alone and do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of our respective churches or employers. Now, let's begin.
Okay, so welcome back to week number 3 of our podcast. This episode, we are still talking about the Heaven's Gate cult. We have previously discussed the history of the cult. We've previously discussed the theology. And now we're going to talk about the sociology of the cult. We're going to get to the fun stuff here.
I don't know. It depends on what your definition of fun is. I enjoy the theology.
Very much. I understand that. And how fun can it be discussing a suicide cult, right?
Right.
But, you know, I try to keep this focused around we're discussing these things because we want to learn from history, which was our first part there, so that we don't repeat it. And it's important to learn other people's theology so that we can understand ours better sometimes. All the time. So let's talk about the Heaven's Gate cult. T and Doe, to start off in the beginning, as we discuss in the history, they didn't really flesh out a whole lot of their culture, of their theology, of their whole thing, of what they were. But by the time we got to the end, they were quite fleshed out. There was a lot to them there.
Yeah.
They had a lot of time together to do that. Did you want to talk about their time together for a little while?
I think we covered quite a bit of that in history.
Well, I knew that was the top of your notes. You were discussing that they were not always actively seeking other people. They were together by themselves for a long time.
Yeah, they were very exclusive, very isolationist. They were very they stayed secluded and kept to themselves. Did their own teaching and their own learning and their own studying. They really had the idea that the devil was in charge of the other religions of the world, leading people away.
So another species or group of space aliens.
Yeah. When you have the hermeneutic that they have, that everything was aliens, you say the devil, you really mean a bad alien.
Discussed about the Luciferians being in control of various things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this was a prominent part of their teachings all the time, but it definitely came up. It was part of how they shaped things. But let's talk about, I called them in a previous episode really weird, odd people, right? They had a certain appearance about them because they ate very communally. They very often ate very simply, soup and vegetables and things. For a long period of time, they did not have much money. And even when they had money, they were very particular with it. They described themselves as living a
monastic
lifestyle. I stumbled on that word there, but the monastic lifestyle. And they very much did, even at the very end when they lived in the fancy mansion. The mansion was fancy. The furnishings were not. They were not. Their clothing was not. They did a lot of things to conserve money. They were very frugal. A famous thing is when they died all wearing these Nike Decade sneakers. And Nike famously stopped making those sneakers. They're quite expensive now. You can buy them on eBay from anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000 nowadays. But they didn't go buy those Nike sneakers because they love those Nike sneakers. They bought them because they got a good deal and bought them all the same at the same time, so they could buy 39 pairs.
Right.
Because of that, they looked funny. Google Heaven's Gate on YouTube. They made videos. They were into video production back when a lot of people weren't into video production. They were into websites and stuff. And they were into video production. And they made their videos look weird. If you look at all of them, the thing I notice, and maybe we should have brought this up in a previous episode, but the thing I noticed was their eyes. I know that, Brian, you and I kind of looked at this differently. I read a little bit and watched a lot of video, and you read a lot, and I don't think watched a whole lot of the video, right?
Right.
But the thing in the videos is their eyes all look the same. These people were not all related. They had no children. They were trying to absolve themselves of sexuality entirely and be gender neutral. So as a result, they all got very short haircuts, wore baggy clothing. I think I previously mentioned some of the males, including Doe, chose to become castrated, got medically castrated to reduce their testosterone and make themselves unable to be sexually active with others and things. They all had the same look about them, and they were all pretty thin. They were different shapes and sizes. They were mostly white folks, but they had a few folks who were people of color as part of the group. They were a minority, but they were there. But all of their eyes looked the same. They look almost haunted. And I've read some commentary where some people have theorized, were they demon possessed? Was right. this what was described in the Bible whenever Jesus looked upon the man who could cast all the demons out into the pigs and they ran into the sea? You know, was this the same sort of thing? They all seemed to follow follow a very false doctrine and pushed a perversion of Scripture. So what do you think about the demon possession theory there?
I've not watched any videos, and obviously I'll never get a chance to meet these people face to face. So obviously that's not something that I would go and say, yeah, they probably were, but I'm definitely not going to say they weren't.
Right.
Right.
And here's the interesting thing. If you watch the documentary or the show, I don't think it's a documentary, that just came out on HBO Max this last month, they feature two former kind of current members of the thing who are still around, who did not exit, who did not suicide, and they have the same eyes. Neither one of them have the short hair that was popular in the group. They actually both have a very hippie-like look, but they have that haunted look in their eyes still.
Yeah. Well, given the theosophical teachings and metaphysics, they were clearly doing something in the occultic realms. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, right? I think when you and I were talking about it, I said it's a possibility that they were demon possessed, but it's a surety that they were influenced, right? There was some form of prelest, like we talked about a few episodes back, delusion of spirituality that wasn't really there.
They were also kind of members of the geek culture. And I should mention that you and I are both kind of members of the geek culture.
Right.
I don't know how much you embrace that. I've embraced it a lot during my life, especially much when I was younger, kind of the more hacker geek culture thing. And that's always kind of where I've identified and laid in. I've never been the preppy person or any of that. So I've kind of been in that subculture. Right.
Right.
And they kind of were, they were a part of that culture as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them, but most of them eventually, they started a company called Higher Source, and most of them worked for that company or worked in other technology things, some at some big companies in Northern California, where all that stuff was happening at the time. Some have said that, well, they were very talented with technology. Others have looked at them more critically and said, well, they were looking for an opportunity to make money, but they weren't all that talented with technology. It's hard to judge that, especially because a lot of what they were doing was websites, and websites have evolved so much over the years. It's easy to look back at websites from the 90s and say, oh, that's just some hack did that.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the early 2000s, we were had Web 2.0 and we're doing things so differently.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If you go look at their website now, you're like, oh, this is not good. But at the time, you know, as I go back and I think about some of the websites that I used to frequent, it was pretty standard. You know, it was standard fare that you had, you know, flashing lights here and there and a dancing hamster off to the side, you know,
yes.
Or a whole page of dancing hamsters. Well, yeah, it's just what it was.
They had a lot of space themed stuff. They were kind of obsessed with the whole space things. They thought they were aliens. They loved Star Trek.
Yeah.
However, I did go look at archive.org and pulled up their old website.
Oh.
And you can put link to that in the show notes. I guess you some links in my notes there.
Yeah.
And pulled up their we've looked at their current website, which is their old website for their group, but I'm talking about for their business, the Heaven's Gate or Heaven's
Right.
It's escaping me at the moment. Higher Source. There we go.
Higher Source. There we go.
Higher Source, which was the business. It also was fairly space themed. That was kind of the thing. And you could kind of get away with that more then than you could nowadays.
Yeah.
And still be a professional site. I looked at some of their customers at the time. I even read an interview with one of their customers at San Diego Polo Club. And the manager at the time mentioned that the members came to him and solicited him for the website. So they had some sort of sales thing going on and said, hey, you know, we can make a website for you. He mentioned that they worked out a deal to do the website, which normally would have cost $6,000, for only $1,000 if he would refer them to some of his members of the San Diego Polo Club.
Reasonable.
Yeah. So they obviously had some marketing insights going on. I'm sorry?
Said you and I have done business that way.
This is true. And we should, full disclaimer, we've also ran a business running doing websites in the past.
Yeah.
I think you might have designed some of them. I know I never designed any websites. We ran a few little business adventures in the past. Some have been wildly successful, and some have not been successful at all.
Right.
This one was not our best one. Neither one of us are really website designers. We're more logical people. But anyways, they had some other interesting clients that I thought were important here. I made a note of some. I'm not looking at all of them, but one of them that kind of ties in with their sci-fi thing was the Kushner Locke Company, which Kushner and Locke were the two people, and Kushner was one of the original directors of the Tron film for Disney. So that's kind of a big name type thing. That's something big. Hey, I'm doing website for Kushner Locke. Now, websites are pretty new back then, but this was the time when everybody wanted to start jumping onto the web, especially companies, you know?
Right.
That was a big deal. Another client that was very important, and the San Diego Polo folks mentioned this, that he talked to them and told them, hey guys, you know, he basically told them, you're kind of weird and you're going to have trouble getting customers by doing this. Maybe y'all need to hire a salesperson who's like a normal to go out and do the sales. And, you know, I've known people who back during that time made good money selling websites for other people, but weren't the people who coded them. Because there's often a disconnect there. And that's kind of where I was going with this, is that there's a disconnect in that culture thing. theirs was because of the cult, but also they were part of the geek culture. They were kind of socially awkward and odd. But one of the examples they brought up to him, showing they were hip with the times, was they had a website, pre-madonna.com, that was actually, the website was for the release of the pre-Madonna album by Stephen Bray, who's Madonna's former boyfriend, who recorded a bunch of stuff right before she got famous, that he later released her songs. So it was an unofficial Madonna album, but they basically did a website for the Madonna album. It mm-hmm. looked fairly professional and didn't have any, for the time, and didn't have any space stuff on it. It still had a website counter at the bottom like everybody else had.
Right.
Back in the day. And so I find that interesting. They had some pretty high profile clients. On the other hand, even for the time, their websites were all quite similar, very simple, and probably not worth $1,000, let alone the $6,000 if that's what they were really charging. They also seemed to be listed almost as demos and not fully fleshed. They didn't list any examples of any big websites, nothing more than 3 or 4 or 5 pages. Their largest website was their own, where they posted some code things, or they posted some examples of some of their work, like some VRML they did, which is interesting, and stuff like that. But they also claimed to be proficient in an awful lot of technology things that would have been really hard to do, even with a group of 39 people. I don't know how much money the business made versus them working for other companies made. We don't have access to their financial records, although we do know they existed and that some journalists did have access to those records. So I'm not sure. But I see the argument that maybe they weren't actually all that great at websites.
Mm.
Like I said, it's hard to judge from now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Looking back, you know, cause you know, you were saying, you know, that the websites probably weren't worth $1,000 to $6,000, you know, in today's world, most definitely not, right? Because you click a couple of buttons and you get some HTML spit out. But in 92, 93, 94, you were having to write all of it 100% from scratch. You know, so it would have been a lot of time and effort that went into it, even without all the CSS and Bootstrap and WordPress that we have today.
That's the other thing. This is where me being an old geek matters.
Yep.
They didn't write it from scratch, and I know why. I recognize, one, some of it is front page.
Oh.
Okay. And there was kind of the whole thing with that with front page. Yep. I recognize some of the graphics and things from front page that they're using. Also, a couple of the websites were part of Web Rings.
Oh, gosh.
Web Rings were popular on sites like GeoCities and I'm trying to remember the other site, but those sites where you go to make a website and they had very basic web design tools there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were using some of those tools, which is fine. A web designer uses some of those tools, but I think their skills were fairly basic. I'm comparing this to myself back then, who barely had a computer, but had at least enough skills to make those websites back then. And, you know, I had one, famously, the Matt's News Network, because my name was Matt's online for some stupid reason, Matt62, because that's the name I had on my father's AOL account, and then later changed into an AIM account.
Nice.
Y'all don't see this, but Brian just laughed at me for having an AOL account.
I had one. I think I had two.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm laughing at Brian for having an AOL account.
Yep. I mean, it's what you got at the time.
But you know, that's part of that culture thing too. So anyways, that's about their company. That's how they made some of their money. I talked about how they were really cheap. We talked about, I mentioned the Nike Decade Snickers, but something else I wanted to bring up was, you mentioned earlier about them going out. In our first episode, we talked about the history about how right before they committed suicide, they kind of went out and celebrated and went and did a lot of things together. They rarely did things separate. They did everything together.
Right.
That was part of their trying to learn to become a crew, because they thought they would become a crew on a ship. Learn to become a crew who could work well together. Also, they did not practice genders or sexuality, which I've brought up a couple of times because this goes against human nature, which was their entire point, to go against human nature. To try to make themselves all kind of androgynous or something, you know, to do that. But I found it interesting. I found an account that says they all went for one last dinner at a Marie Callender's restaurant. And they all had the same thing. Iced tea, dinner salad, and turkey pot pie. I mean, maybe they just really love that meal. But if I was going to have a last meal, that was not what I would order.
Right. Yeah. Especially not if you've got plenty of money sitting in a bank account.
Yeah. Yeah. And they paid their rent. I mean, if I'm fixing to suicide, I'm not going to pay the rent, right? I just go spend it on something else. No, they paid their rent. They paid up their bills. It's not like they left things undone.
Right.
They put an away message on their phone for their business. And somebody said they called and somebody emailed them back. Apparently this was in the middle of the suicides, and said they were going to be away and didn't know when they would be back or something like that. And then when they tried to call them again, they got no answer at all.
Mm.
Yeah. And we mentioned before, somebody's still running the website.
Right.
They're still doing that. And I did make a note of that. It is theorized that it's Mark and Sarah King who still maintain it. As we talk about, they still answer emails.
Right.
Another interesting thing was they keep a seating chart. So they had a 72-inch projection TV, which was quite large for the time.
It was massive for the time, yeah.
It's large for this time. This was a projector. But still. So they had a nice big TV. They actually had 6 TVs in that house, but they kept a very strict upkeep of what they could watch. So they weren't just like, they weren't down with OPP, you know? You're supposed to say, you know me.
Yeah, no.
Again,
once again, up here.
I tried to do a culture reference that was like 30 years old for you there, buddy.
Yeah, nope.
I would have guessed you were homeschooled, man.
I know, right?
But anyways, they were allowed to watch some things, and it really wasn't clear what they were allowed to watch and what they weren't. I mean, we know from some of their records that we could only watch approved shows. There's not any documentation about why something was approved or not approved. They watched a lot of pop culture stuff. There's a lot of stuff they love to watch. And a lot of stuff they didn't watch. And it's not real clear why one way or the other. Like other cults or even religions and stuff, you'll see where, like, you know, oh, we don't watch Harry Potter because it's witchcraft or something like that.
Right.
They really didn't have that, but they did have a what's there and what's not there. And one thing that's important is this was not controlled directly by Doe. This was controlled by one of the other members.
Hmm.
He did that sort of thing all the time, where he would entrust a member to be in charge of certain sections of what's happening.
Which, if you're building a crew, makes sense. You know, the captain doesn't do everything. He doesn't take the wrench down and fix the leak, right? He entrusts it to someone else to go and do that.
That's a whole other subject, but yes, that is hard to do too if you're trying to be the captain. As someone who functions in a captain in his day-to-day basis or something to that like that, it is hard for me not to grab a wrench and fix something sometimes.
Right.
But I know if I grab the wrench, I'm going to lose where the navigation is on the system.
Exactly.
And we'll end up in deep space somewhere.
Yep.
So, yes. So, yep. I guess Doe had to be Picard and someone else had to be Riker, right? And it wasn't even just like one that was number two. It was various people in the crew, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I can't help make the references, man.
It's okay.
Like, right. You're looking at me like, what? Man, stop
it. I mean, I know who Picard is.
Right. Of course you know Picard, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so they were very specific about how they did things.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very specific. I also read an account where they were driving after a meeting. You were talking about they had two big times when they did the recruiting. And the second recruiting, they were driving after a meeting, and they were discussing why nobody there answered the call. And they genuinely felt sorrow for those people. They genuinely felt that other people just didn't know better. They were worried right. about something we haven't brought up even in the history so far, is that there was a group of parents, of members, who was trying to get their children out of this. This is a fairly common thing for cults in the 70s as well, and into the 80s and 90s. And there was a group who was trying to find their children. And at some point, they all went back home and visited their families for a while.
Mm.
And then went back. And not everybody went back. Yeah. Again, paralleling other cults we've talked about. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to be, you know, when you think about it, in the case of someone like Jones, right, who literally shipped people off to the other side of the world to isolate them, when you force people outside of where they're comfortable, right, you start to get some dissension and some problems. But when you allow that little bit of freedom, right, it's a lot easier to come back, right, and say, I know that I can go and I can be a part of this and then come back and see my family again in a couple of years. That little bit of freedom is enough.
I know of another institution that does the same exact thing. And we're fixing to lose all of our three listeners when I say this.
Uh-oh.
The United States military.
Yes.
They bring you in with all these promises. They send you off to boot camp where they break you down to build you back up again. And then they send you home for a couple weeks
mm-hmm.
so that you'll come back and finish your service over your next 3-4 years.
Right. Yep.
And then they throw some money at you, send you home for a couple weeks and say, come back.
Right. I was going to say dieting. You know, every now and then you have to have that day of being able to step back and eat something that you probably wouldn't, or else it just gets too hard. But military is the same.
Military is the same as diet eater cults, you know?
Yes. Yep, pretty much.
I should mention, I'm pretty sure, you never served in the military, right? Brian and I neither would have actually served in the military, so we don't completely know what we're talking about here. Just to be clear, we're just having a laugh at your expense. but yes, so they got to go home and do that. That was part of that time when Doe was trying to figure things out a little bit, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gave him some time not having everybody around all the time. You know, to figure stuff out. But you mentioned before during the history that there were a couple hundred of them at one time. And by the time they got to the end, there were 39. And you can go on their website now and you can watch their exit interviews, basically where they videotape themselves saying, this isn't a suicide. We want to do this. This is, you know, a good thing. And they look happy.
Mm-hmm.
Haunted, but happy.
But happy. Yeah.
They're smiling.
Yeah, reading some of the letters, you can read happiness.
Yeah. You know, my son just asked me a few minutes ago if he could listen to my podcast. And he's been having some trouble sleeping. I recently let him borrow one of my radios, so he has a radio up there. And he's been listening to Unshackled. Did you ever listen to Unshackled?
Nope.
I'll have to introduce you to Unshackled. You'll add it to your podcast thing, and you'll have lots of comments about it. It is from the Movie Institute and from the United Rescue Mission in Chicago, Illinois, where they tell stories of redemption, where people have been lost and then been found in Christ, basically, and redeemed. But he's been listening to different... besides that, he's been listening to talk radio and sports shows and all this. Just whatever he finds on the radio dial in the middle of the night. So who knows, right?
Whew.
But I listened to the same when I was his age, and it was interesting. But I was worried about him listening to our podcast here, because some of the things we talk about on this podcast are kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that I wanted him to listen to that. I suggested he listen to some other podcasts you and I have worked on that kind of talk on a little more positive subject stuff. I'm not worried about giving him a nightmare.
Right.
You know? And I think that we have not really so far discussed how horrific it really was that they all killed themselves. They ended their family lines at that point. None of these people bred. Well, that's not true.
Right.
Applewhite and Nettles both bred.
Yeah.
They both had children. And yet nobody else in the group did. I don't think.
That we know of.
They did, they gave up their children.
Mm-hmm.
So they intentionally didn't breed after joining the group. And then they all killed themselves out. They try so hard to explain that it's not killing themselves, but at the end of the day, it's death. You know? And I think it's important that we acknowledge that that's a scary thing and that's a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Jesus said, "I've come to bring life and life more abundantly." And he meant that in a much fuller way than just your life, that you have life or you don't have life in your body. But I think that applies too. He did not come to bring death to us. He came to bring to us the path forward, life in the Lord, the path forward to live a life with God, to live in reconciliation. And what they brought with their false theology, what they brought with all their falseness, was death.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go to wage to look at this group, and we go to gauge, you know, what they built their foundations on, what they did, their end result was they brought death. That's scary to me.
Yep. So on that note, I want to read from Cerati's exit statement.
One more thing.
Okay.
His name is Cerati. We didn't mention, I can't believe we went the whole podcast without mentioning, that they all renamed themselves with something, a couple of consonants, and then Adi or Odie. So it's Cerati, not Cerati, it's Cerati. Everybody's an Odie at the end. And so everybody got a new name, just like T and Doe got new names. So Rhodey got a new name. Go ahead.
Yep. So he wrote this long letter, and he talked about, he started out with statements about, you have unlimited freedom if. And that if statement, I think, sets the whole mood for what he's trying to say. You're free if you pay your taxes. You're free if you're using a credit card. You're free if you're part of such and such religion. You're free if this, if that, and the other. Right? Pointing out that while we may think we have freedoms, there's still limitations on our human existence. Either you never knew life, or you've already died. He goes on, "We can no longer live and function here by the standards of our father's house. And as the final days approached, we said they visited various places and points of interest, only to find that, quote, the things that hold the interest of humans, and which once even did the same for our vehicles, now seem such a waste of time. I can honestly say, thanks but no thanks. My Lord is sufficient by himself." He knew, right, in his mind, Doe was the Lord. That's all that there was. That was the only option. And for him, the teachings of Doe was enough that he would take the drugs and succumb to death.
It's so foreign to me because I have known some of my spiritual leaders, and every spiritual leader, the more I've gotten to know them, the more I have understood their flaws.
Right.
And I've played that role to other people before, and I'm sure probably had some of the same thing, where the more they got to know me, the more they understood my flaws. I find it so hard to believe that a person would be God. So hard that I think I would have that trouble even if I was standing with Jesus Christ, to be honest. I think I find it easier to believe in a spiritual Jesus Christ now, 2,000 years after his resurrection, than I would have had I walked with him in the streets of Jerusalem. You know? If I'm honest. So I find that so hard, but I see other people who deify their spiritual leaders already, and he did it in actuality. And 38 others, or 37 others.
Right. Well, I think that does it for this month of Heaven's Gate. You know, we split it up into multiple episodes to make it easier for you guys to listen. And we hope that it's been beneficial for you. And when we come back, Matt, who are we talking about next? Have you looked at the list and decided? If not, I'm going to pick one.
I haven't decided, but I know we haven't talked about Manson yet. Do we want to talk about Manson? Or is there like a happy cult we can talk about? Oh, no, never mind.
I was going to say.
I have a new one. I don't know anything about them, but we're going to learn. How about Westboro Baptist?
Okay. That will be a blast. So join us in September where we talk about Westboro Baptist Church.
Thank you for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Don't forget that we have our website, faithfraudsfalsehoods.com, where we post a more detailed blog with references so that you can go and take a look at all of this information for yourself. Also, remember to share this with a friend and help us get the word out there for everyone else. We'll see you in the next one.